Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report, a special Sunday daily editorial as we are chatting with Rick Bensignor, president of Bensignor Investment Strategies, writes the institutional newsletter, Supposedly Irrelevant Factors, that is read by some of the most successful hedge funds in the world. On the retail and individual side, you can check out the In the Know Trader website, which Rick has three products there, a monthly report called 7-Eleven, where he picks no more than 7 of the 11 spider ETFs with the goal to beat the S&P, weekly report called the Tactical Trader Report, and a new daily report called the Daily Tip Sheet. Rick, as we always do, we'll jump around to a number of different markets, but I want to stick more big picture, talk about geopolitics and their impact on the markets. We're seeing escalations in the Middle East. We have a couple wars ongoing right now, and it seems like the moves in markets on the back of escalations are short-lived and sometimes moderated almost right away, just like what we saw Thursday night and then into early Friday trading as we are chatting right now. Rick, what's your take on this environment where people are expecting geopolitics on at least a short-term basis to have more of an impact? It doesn't seem to be right now.
Well, I think, Corey, the reason is because what we've seen in the last week, let's go back to last weekend when Iran sent 300 missiles towards Israel, but Israel and a small coalition, including the U.S. and a couple of countries in Europe, and of course help from Jordan, were able to stop 99.5%, if not higher, of all the rockets even getting into Israeli soil. So as much as this looked like this could be the advent of something really major, very quickly, Israel and its friends squashed the attack. And that was that. And Iran said, or whether you believe them or not is a different story, but they said, that's all we're doing. Israel promised to retaliate. Their, I don't know what you call it, their war committee, you know, met and decided that they were going to revenge the attack that Iran had done. And then last night, all of a sudden, I saw S&P futures tank in a few minutes, over 50 points, then 60, then 70. I'm like, and I see the price of oil shut up $2.50. And my only thought was, this must be Israel and Iran for oil to move like that too. And I couldn't find anything on CNN, Fox, MSNBC, none of the networks I couldn't find anything on. And then finally, you know, I stayed up later because, you know, the markets were moving so much. And finally, I saw through Bloomberg, a story trickle through. They were quoting an ABC source that said that Israel had attacked a nuclear facility inside of Iran. I've got some family in Israel. In fact, my stepson and his wife just flew there yesterday for the Passover holiday. And my wife and I were very concerned and tried reaching them, but it was 5 o'clock in the morning. They were still asleep. And, you know, we went to bed kind of concerned. And yet I stayed up late until about 1:30 in the morning. And when I did, futures were, S&P was only down about 45 points after being down, I don't know, 70 something. So I was thinking, okay, maybe, you know, we'll see, but this isn't good. And then I wake up this morning and I see S&P futures are down like 9 points. I'm like, this thing has blown over again. These seem to be very short-term events where markets react, and rightly so. But there's a sense here that this is not going to turn out into a full-scale war. I saw people on Twitter saying, you know, Israel has just started World War III. Well, apparently not. It's the type thing where certainly it makes sense to have some concern. S&P, as we talk now, which is midday on Friday, S&P has just fallen after actually it was up a fair amount this morning. So it's now down about 40. And you've got option expiration today. I noticed coming into today that the strike price for spiders that expired today, the 500 strike, which was the at the money's last night, had 60,000 calls and 90,000 puts. at the 500 strike. So you'll think that that should in somewhat, in some way, kind of be close to where we could go out today. Right now we're down to 495 and a half, and the 495s were the second most active or open interest put spreads. So, you know, the markets do what they do, and the reactions to these global events do seem to be far more short-lived. One of my favorite words from back in being in high school and studying for the SAT vocabulary, the verbal part, one of my favorite words is ephemeral, which means short-lived. We are seeing constant ephemeral swift moves in the market reacting to the global political scene, but they don't tend to be longer lasting. Now, what we're seeing in the general down move in the stock market, and I don't mean today, but what we've been seeing for a few weeks now, is really the result of higher rates and the fact that the Fed has finally clarified what most of us knew all along, which is that the Fed, the rate cuts that were going to come this year were going to be far less than the seven that were built in early January by Fed Fund futures traders. It's down to one. That makes a heck of a lot more sense to me, that one or none or maybe two. But, you know, you and I do this radio, you know, conversation every month. You heard me say since January, there's no way I saw multiple cuts coming like the six or seven that were priced in to start.
Yeah, Rick, it's interesting how much the market's expectations have shifted coming into this year, where there was as many as seven cuts priced in, and now there's people saying there may be no cuts or just one or two. So a big change. And some of these trends in the markets and even in oil have been in place for weeks, even before this geopolitical tension flared up again. But you're right that these geopolitical events seem to be more fleeting and ephemeral each time. It's interesting on the energy sector. I'd like to dig in and get your thoughts on oil, because there's so many things that drive the oil pricing, whether it's the OPEC plus, and the plus being Russia and some of the other countries, what they're going to do, the builds that we've seen in North America. There's all the other tensions with currencies. How do you read a market like oil that's so dynamic, has so many factors? How are you looking at it currently, and how do you even evaluate something like oil?
So, it's a good question. I can tell you, I grew up in the commodities markets. I was on the floor. My first job in the whole industry was on the floor of the NYMEX, where crude oil is traded. I was, I got a job in college as a runner on the floor, and seeing the floor environment is what made me go into the industry. And I spent, ultimately, I got, after I graduated, I spent 12 years on the floor of the exchange trading in the pits. I will tell you that now, over 40 years later, crude oil continues to be one of the most difficult markets to trade. You know, you can try to play for general trends, but intraday pricing and even how it trades over several days sometimes makes absolutely no sense. The rally up today, you know, kind of the spike high overnight was similar to a prior high from, I don't know, I think it was a week ago or something like that. I could take a look, but a lot of times people don't realize that former highs and lows end up being virtually as important as anything else when doing analysis. You know, it really, there's so much range trading. And if you can spot that, I had a friend last night, one of my dearest friends, we were speaking at probably 11:30 at night or something like that, which we don't normally do. But when we saw what was going on, and he's a crude oil trader. And he told me that he sold for his own account. He sold some crude oil last night when it was up almost $3. And I said, wow, really ballsy move. And, you know, I wake up and I see it's now, you know, way off there. And it was a great trade. Crude oil is really difficult. I will tell you, I've traded all commodities. I traded a lot of them in the pit, too. And crude oil is just a tough, tough nut to crack. And I can't really give your listeners like the inside scoop on how you do it, because you've got to watch it and trade it all the time, just like any other market, just to really get a good sense of how to trade it. Because, you know, I wouldn't have gone and sold it last night when it was up $2.50. for fear that it, you know, I could go to bed and be up $5. There are certain markets that have more outside influences than you can possibly imagine. And to me, crude oil has proven to be probably, out of all major commodity markets, the most difficult to trade on a consistent basis.
Rick, to that point, it's probably been tough to trade simply because it's been range bound for over a year and a half now. As much as you want to talk about short-term trading, is there something that oil is telling us bigger picture here that it hasn't broken out in either direction really since 2022 when it made that great run higher and then came back into this trading range?
Well, look, the Ukraine-Russia war spiked oil up to 133 bucks. We're talking WTI here. And fairly close to the top, one or two major Wall Street commodity research departments came out and said $200 oil. And right away I said, that ain't happening. And it topped, I think, within 1 to 2 weeks. I mean, I literally think they were somewhere in the $130 range when one of the biggest Wall Street name research departments came out with a $200 call. Oil has been down since. The war in the Ukraine obviously continues, but there is and has been a boatload of oil available. The U.S. exports oil all over the world now, number one exporter. And WTI has been eventually range bound and far lower than that $133, you know, peak. We got to what, about $65, half of that. It sold off 50%. And you're right, it's been range bound, got to 95 last year on one, I think it was one day and one day only. And it's pretty much traded between 70 and, I don't know, 80, 85 for the bulk of the time since. Why can, with all the geopolitics concerns and wars that are still underway and more recently, you know, in the Middle East, I think it's a supply issue. There's just an inordinate amount. It was interesting that I think it was the CEO, I don't remember if it was of Oxy Petroleum, one of the major firms, the CEO was on TV in the last month or so saying that he thought that there would be a shortage of oil going into next year, which I thought was surprising. And the market has been able to hold that, you know, the twice we got down to about 65, and it's complete range bound. So the bigger picture is unclear. You can make the case why oil could go higher if you keep having global crises. And at the same time, I'd say you probably could make, you know, that there are analysts out there who could easily make the case for $50 WTI oil. So I think that kind of just keeps it range bound here.
Well, Rick, while oil pricing has been in that range, the oil stocks have been playing a different note. They've actually broken out. If you look at the largest producers in the ETF XLE, which I know you track in your 7-Eleven report, it broke out to new all-time highs just 2 weeks ago, despite oil not really doing anything amazing. And even XOP, the smaller oil producers and even developers, broke out 2 weeks ago to new all-time highs. So the oil stocks have been pretty robust. What do you make of that? I know they don't always have to track exactly the equities and the commodity, but what do you make of the moves in the oil stocks?
Well, look, you've had a very strong year. If you take something like XOP, which I look at frequently, because when I think of trading those names, I usually think more XOP than XLE, simply because XLE is also going to include natural gas, and natural gas, you know, has gotten pummeled and is not far from all-time lows, or at least certainly secular lows. XOP got into the 160s a couple of weeks ago, but that's basically the October high from 2022, and not all that far from the highest high back in, I guess it was mid-22. And they've come off hard the last 2 weeks. So again, kind of prior highs. It doesn't matter if, you know, something takes out a prior high by a buck or two or a small amount in percentage terms. because if it falls right back underneath that high, you don't really have the breakout. All you did is squeeze some shorts out. Oils, you know, XOP has come off hard the last 2 weeks since making that cyclical high, but because it was the same price as a major high in fourth quarter of 2022, you haven't really broken out. You've had a very strong 2024, but you haven't broken out of the range yet. So even if they made new highs, you know, cyclical highs, they've given those right back. You know, that high I'm referring to in late 2022 in XOP was at 161.4. And you're down to 152. So you made a new high and you've come right back off. That's pure range trading. You haven't gotten the definitive move yet to really say that this has, you know, changed its long-term pattern. And you have to remember how badly energy stocks have performed between 2000. So when in the late, I think it was 1999 that these SPDR ETFs started. So from roughly 2000 to 2020, XLE, in this massive bull market that stocks had in the 20-year period, XLE was down. It was the only sector of the market that was actually down and did not partake in all in the 20-year bull run. Because of that, they were determined to be somewhat cheap and way under-owned. So in the last few years, you've seen people come back into energy names, and rightly so. They've done pretty darn good over the last few years. So I do have energy as one of the seven sectors in the 7-Eleven report, and it's done decently well, certainly in general. And, you know, I had a pullback this year, but ended up holding support on the lows and in relative terms to the spiders, and it's bounced back again. So I think part of the reason, Shad, that you're saying, you know, that the energy names have done better is because they have been horrific investments for the better part of the last 20 years. And finally, you're getting some participation.
They really started moving in the last 4 years. So they have made some people money, but hey, it's been the bigger guys, and there's actually been some action in terms of M&A and big money being spent to consolidate some of these projects. I know just some of our listeners, they've made some good money off of that oil sector, but you are right, man. Oh, man, it was dead for years, if not decades there for a while. Let's shift focus over to gold, because gold continues to hang out right around all-time highs, $2,400. Rick, in terms of, again, tying it into geopolitics, tying it into simply demand, it sounds like coming from the East, but also now a little bit higher volume in some of the gold ETFs in the U.S. What's driving these gold prices, and are they just going to hang around this $2,400, consolidate a lot of these gains?
So it's a good question, and we, you know, we always talk about gold when we talk each month. Months ago, we talked about that if gold made new all-time highs, it could hold the new all-time highs, because there had been one spike up earlier this year, and then it came right back down. But then we got back, you know, we made new highs, and you got the definitive breakout from what had been a multi-year trading range from roughly, using futures, we'll say $2,050 on the high side. And we got as low as about $1,650 on the false breakdown that we had seen a little over a year ago. So you had a $400 range that fairly consistently went back and forth across the range. When you finally broke out for real, and I said this on your show months ago, you could make a point, you could make the case that gold was going to go to the mid-2400s. Simply by using an old standard of, you know, we were in a $400 trading range. If the trading range breaks out, add $400 to what had been the top of the trading range, which was $2,050. So that target's $2,450. What's the highest high we've seen this year in the futures markets? $2,449, a buck away, right? So, I mean, this has hit any initial target for the up move that I could have made and did make months ago. Is gold heading to $3,000 an ounce, as one of the sell side firms this week came out with and said? I don't know. You've got to have more You've got to have continued central bank buying. I think, believe it or not, and this is a little different than I had thought 6 months ago, where purchases into Bitcoin, I said, was kind of hurting gold because I thought back then gold might have been able to break out, and it took until far more recently to do. But I think the fact that Bitcoin in general has held up, even though, you know, doesn't matter that it's $10,000 off of the high, I'm saying in general, Bitcoin has held up. That's getting more people in general just looking into owning some of these alternative assets. And in many ways, you can put gold and Bitcoin in the same category of safety trade, you know, a place to hide your money if things go bad. I don't look at Bitcoin as a hedge against inflation the way I do gold, but gold has also been more than just a hedge against inflation. It's always been protection against you know, bigger problems in the world than just one day political events. So gold has reached a very normal and to me obvious target on the upside, and we continue to play between 2400 and 2450. At this point, I would think if gold broke beneath probably something like 23.25, then it may get a further pullback of another, I don't know, $100 or something like that. The trend is up. I have multiple models that say it should pause in here and not keep flying. But the two over the last couple of weeks, the sell-off last week and this week are holding just above that 23.25 level. And to me, that is kind of a signal level of where if you get Friday close underneath there, it may open the door for another $100 down. But I have no reason to think that we'd have any material breach of the breakout of, you know, there's no reason for gold to go down $400 an ounce and go back to where it had just, you know, the top end of the range it had just spent the last few years trading in. So, yeah, I think you want to be buyers of gold on a pullback. It's just a matter of where. Luckily, I've owned gold for a long time, and you know, I'm happy with the results. I actually added some more on the breakout. I think I was in the 2150-ish level or so where I added some more. And now I'm actually thinking, you know, I'm toying with the idea of taking a little off just because when I hit targets like this, and I have timing targets, I have measured targets, I can make the case to perhaps take a little off the table.
Yeah, Rick, nothing wrong with ringing the register on some profits if something hits your technical targets. And then, like you say, if it has a corrective move, it's probably not going to fall out of bed, but you could buy again at a lower price. But let's look at the gold stocks. A lot of people listening to this show are invested in the gold equities. And unlike the oil equities, as far as outperforming the oil price recently, the gold equities have been underperforming in a big way the gold price. And so the gold equities have just not been keeping up. A lot of people expected a little more outperformance considering gold breaking out to new all-time highs. How are you looking at something like, let's say, GDX or GDXJ?
So GDX right now is just consolidating over the last couple of weeks. The near-term places that I'm paying attention to, if we get above 35.25, I kind of like that. And I would think that it should hold just north of 32 on the way down. Everything between that is just trading and noise. And unless you want to get involved in that, you don't make decisions while you're in there. If it had a couple of daily closes underneath 32, let's call it 32, I don't know, 15, something like that, then you possibly get down to just about 30. But I don't think so. I think these names should, you know, the gold miners should do decently here. They are going to be affected by the stock market because they are corporate equities. You know, these are stocks. It is not bullion itself. And the stocks have really badly trailed bullion for quite some time. And they've played catch up since, let's say, March 1st. You know, GDX was trading, I don't know, 26.5 or so, something like that, March 1st. And now it's 34. So in percentage terms, it's a huge move in a very short amount of time and a better move than gold has made. But if you look, as you know, if you go back in some time of GDX versus bullion. This made a secular high back in 2020, as well as a secular low in 2020 because of COVID. And, you know, it's been bouncing for the last, since let's say March 1st, you've had GDX outperformance, but it's still way, let's put it this way. It's in percentage terms, let's see, it's 370. It's still 20% or so beneath its 200-week moving average of GDX versus GLD. So it is, you know, quite cheap and hasn't proven itself yet other than how it's acted the last 2 months. But beyond that, it's still been terribly underperforming the price of gold.
Rick, have you noticed any new interest in gold stocks from institutions, from any of the traders that you talk to that could show that maybe some new investors to the sector are starting to come in?
Yeah, I do think they are. I think the new high in gold itself has made more investors and specifically institutions that I talk to more willing to own gold names as compared to necessarily gold itself. A lot of these guys can't own gold itself, but they can own GDX names.
Okay, Rick, well, moving aside from the commodity space and back into the general equities, are there any sectors that you think are starting to take on leadership roles now that some of those big tech names have rolled over, as you mentioned at the onset of the call? Is there any sectors you've got your eyeball on that you think are presenting relative strength?
It's funny. It's a really good question. And when I say it's funny, it's not like ha-ha funny. It's more like the sector situation. When you look at the natural rotation that exists amongst the 11 S&P sectors, you're seeing some of the cyclicals that you would have expected to do well are starting to not do so well. Financials, obviously, the move up, and even though earnings generally so far of the, you know, we just started a new earnings season, generally the bank names have been okay, but XLF is so far going nowhere. XLC has pulled back as of recently. XLK technology has pulled back as of recently. Where you're starting to see some interest is in materials. Energy continues to improve after having been horrific. And probably, and this is also surprising, especially because it's a difficult sector to play because and what I'm referring to is industrials. There's so many different components to industrials that they're almost always kind of like a neutral weight because for every subsector that's good, there's some other subsector that's bad. But right now, out of the 11 sectors, industrials is both outperforming and has positive momentum in that outperformance. None of the other 10 sectors have that right now. Now, it doesn't make it my favorite sector, but it is one of the seven I have in the 7-Eleven report. And it is the only sector right now that is outperforming and has positive momentum. Something like energy has positive momentum, but in the grander scheme, it's still not outperforming. And materials, I would say the same thing. It's picking up momentum. It's got an improving picture, but net, it's not outperforming. But those three right now are probably the three best looking ones going forward.
So, Rick, big picture view then. We have the S&P so far this month in April down a little over 5%. We're starting to see some weakness after quite a run in November, December, January, February, March. It was up, up, up for the markets. Are we seeing a more significant rollover here? How deep could this general rollover be? And on top of that, what's the market telling you about the inflation environment and the overall risk environment?
So the inflation environment is still very much at hand. I commend the Fed for doing what they're trying to do and their steadfastness and trying to achieve their mandated goals. I don't see 2% inflation anytime soon going to be a reality. And, you know, a 10-year at 4.62 that touched 4.7 earlier this week is certainly not what the market had been thinking about this year. Fixed income portfolio managers have gotten beaten up terribly this year. Again, you know, the call coming into this year is that the biggest consensus macro call on the street on December 31st of 2023 is that interest rates would dramatically fall in 2024. If you look at the TLT, the very popularly traded ETF that tracks the US 20-year, it has not had a single close this year that was higher than last year's close. The US 10-year yield chart had one close that was 0.1 basis point above last year's close. Otherwise, every other close has been higher on the year. So only once was it lower. And the stock market, the fuel for the rally that started last October was the belief that multiple Fed cuts were coming this year. And the Fed's made it pretty clear now that that's not going to be the case. So you really have removed a lot of the reason for the stock market rally to have been what it was. So this pullback over the last, let's say, the month of April, which is really where the pain has been for bulls, is you're finally getting very close. You've hit 5%. I actually look at something that measures market increments in 5.56%. This is a model that Tom DeMarc had come up with many years ago called Trend Factors. And, you know, for the S&P, let me see, that level is 49.62. And we're trading right now at 49.76. So we're just 14 points away from kind of resetting what has happened, a potential bounce point over the next few days. But this is going to come down to where interest rates go forward. If we go to 5%, stocks are not going to hold up. Then they're going to take another leg down, and you could see the decline be 11% off of the high, which I think is normal and historically not uncommon to see something more than a 10% correction given the rally that we had seen. If rates pull back, I think somewhere between 4.25 and 4.40 is all they get down to. The breakout happened kind of above 4.35, 4.4. So I'm willing to give a little bit beneath, you know, if they pull back, there should be support right around 4.35, 4.4. If it doesn't, I'm willing to let it slide a little just to wash out some, you know, weak-handed people in the market. If you got under 4% at this point, I think that would be a pretty big surprise because now people are saying that's not happening. Now, interestingly, I had dinner this week with an institutional client of mine, and he's a fairly significant fixed income portfolio manager. And I said to him, what do you think the odds are that you'll see rates go under 4% sometime this year? And I figured he'd say 10%, 20%, something like that. And I was shocked when he said 80% chance he thinks that we're going under 4%. Now, he's not saying we'll close the year at 4%, but like we will again see under 4% this year. And I'd say if you ask the street now how many people would say that, I don't think you'd find 20% of the people saying that. So I don't know which one, who's right or wrong here, but the initial move for the first quarter was just dead against what was expected. And until you potentially now change the fact that people have learned how to live with higher rates, which I think in general people are doing. So, you know, a 5% pullback is not horrific. But if we go challenge that 5% high made last year, I think, you know, stocks will see further erosion. And you can see how quickly a lot of the gains can disappear too, because, you know, in 2 weeks or so, let's see, the last time we were this low was mid to late February. So we gave up 2 months of gains in 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, it's been a crazy move, hasn't it? But that call, under 4%, boy, oh boy, as you said, not a whole lot of people expecting that, but that's what I found so interesting about these markets. It's a number of people that are trying to jump on the bull side, and then there's also the bears out there, too. We'll see where this correction goes to because of how strong that run was in Q4 and even Q1 of this year. This rotation of money, though, seems to be into commodities right now. We'll see how much longer that lasts. But Rick, thank you so much for taking time with us on this special Sunday editorial. I recommend everyone to go check out that In the Know Trader website. Check out Rick's products if you are an active trader, because Rick has been very much on the ball in a wide range of sectors on the downside and on the upside. So, Rick, thank you, as always, for your time. We'll chat again next month. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.